Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode 189 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
Man, so I keep thinking things are going to slow down with Congress not really doing much here lately, but it seems to be they're starting to pick some things back up. One of the big things that caught my eye this past week, and there's very little details about it, but Binance and Franklin Templeton have announced a partnership that they're working together to release digital asset products. Now, unfortunately, they didn't really reveal what the products would be, but they said further announcements will come out later this year. But you're talking about the largest exchange in the world and one of the largest asset managers in the world that are now working together, which is amazing, in my opinion.
Yeah, these kind of big conglomeration or people working together. I mean, we kind of saw it on the corporate side, you know, when we've got SoftBank and Cantor Fitzgerald getting together. So, yeah, I mean, Bitcoin's got a lot of people's attention now.
And then the other big thing that I saw, and I know we've kind of heard it before, but Paul Akins was doing something on Wednesday, and he pretty much came out and said most tokens aren't securities. And he pledged that most tokens will fall outside of securities law and that entrepreneurs will be able to raise capital on chain without endless legal uncertainty. So, I mean, this is just a wild time for us to see that kind of reaction from the SEC when it has been quite the opposite for, I guess, ever since we've known it.
Yeah, and if they can actually get that clarity, I feel like we've talked about this. There's been rulings from judges that certain tokens aren't securities, or in the secondary market, they aren't securities and things like that. So if they can get like really firm definition on that, then I think that'll be great up until somebody abuses it and then it has to circle back. But yeah, as long as it's actually kind of a firm definition and these guys can move on it, then that's great.
Well, I mean, I think that takes us kind of to the market structure bill and the Clarity Act and everything going on there. There seems to be a lot of discussion going on within the two sides of Congress. And back with the Genius Act, there were some things that prevented stablecoin issuer interest or yield directly. And there was kind of a loophole that left some of the exchanges and affiliates to end up doing that, which the banking industry hated. So there has been a lot of disagreement on what's going to happen. And what it sounds like is the Senate Democrats are trying to provide a proposal to prohibit that and move things forward, because I think you're going to have a certain number of Democrats on the Senate side to approve the market structure bill. And in order to do that, they want kind of some of that changed. And then they also want seats at the table from a regulation perspective. So I think that there's probably going to be some concessions made. I hope it's not that, but it is probably something that is going to happen to make things move forward and for these things to be written in law. And then in 2 years, the next administration can't come through and change anything.
Right. Yeah. We've had mostly executive action, and that's can be just unwound. So if these corporations and these actors, you know, they need more than a 3 or 4 year window to get things done. And then if everything falls apart and that their industry is made illegal, then that they can't really do it. So yeah, getting laws written would be pretty much a monumental step for this administration.
Yeah. Speaking of the House, the U.S. House Appropriations Bill filed a bill last week that they want to require the Treasury Department to study the feasibility of a strategic Bitcoin reserve and outlawing the custody, cybersecurity, and accounting for the government-held digital assets. So that's exciting. We were hoping that was going to come a long time ago. Now it's looking like it's sitting on the floor of the House waiting for them to vote on it. But I think if it did get voted on, the Treasury has like 90 days to come back and say how it's going to happen. Because it doesn't seem like anybody wants to be the one to say how it's going to happen. And I mean, it wouldn't surprise me for Scott Bessent to say, here's how you're going to do it.
Right. Yeah. He seems like he's still gaining steam and confidence and getting more vocal. And yeah, Besson seems like he's not afraid to drive the train.
And then the other thing that I saw too that was really interesting from a U.S. government perspective is we talked a little bit in the past about Chainlink and how they were helping get some of the U.S. agencies' data on chain. And what they're now focused on is going beyond just that little bit of data and getting bringing more of the government functions on chain. They started with that public economic data, but their long-term goal is actually to bring U.S. elections onto the blockchain systems. And what they've said already is the blockchain election verification technology is ready. The implementation faces political rather than technical obstacles at this point. So no surprise there. We could actually have a much better system, but that means nobody could cheat anymore. And I think both sides are doing it, unfortunately.
Yeah, the election, cleaning up the election stuff seems like everybody wants to talk about it. Nobody actually wants it. So the solutions were probably there before any blockchain technologies existed. It's a way to do it, but they're, you know, the ways that it were in front of them 20 years ago were still not used. So, you know, I don't know that people really want it that are in power. So I don't think it'll happen, but you could definitely, I mean, blockchains can definitely use it. There's a group in maybe Guatemala that used blockchain to secure that election that worked well. So it's definitely a use case.
Yeah. And last week we led off this entire conversation talking about this JavaScript hack that the Ledger CTO had made everybody aware of, and it had targeted all this JavaScript code with malware. And what we have found in the past week, they have managed to steal only about just over $1,000 of crypto. So that's great news. Now, it's always possible that there will be some delayed reports of impact, but based on what they know today, the quick detection and takedown efforts seem to have limited the attacker's success. So that's exciting to hear. The only problem is there's a new one now. So there's something called Mod Stealer. They're spreading through fake recruiter ads using obfuscated code, and it's targeting browser wallets, and it hides itself by disguising itself as a background helper. So this one is probably seems to be more of a direct threat to crypto users and platforms than the other one did. So I guess we'll see over the next week or two what happens with that and if they're able to deal with that moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, this is between this and the, you know, the phone calls and text messages saying that, hey, you've started your Coinbase withdrawal, call this number if this isn't you. And then they start to do the persuasive thing where they scare you into giving them some kind of code or whatever. Like those two attack vectors, you know, it makes it tough for kind of for people that don't have confidence in what they're doing with crypto and Bitcoin to give up some information and get themselves into trouble. So hopefully this kind of stuff, they figure out a way around it.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for sure. Tether was in the news too. They just unveiled USAT, which is a US compliant stablecoin. It's really going to compete with USDC, which Circle had. It'll regulate or operate on regulated rails, which means it's not going to be permissionless. It'll be fully transparent and traceable, which is what they want. USDT, which is the original Tether, will remain unchanged, and a lot of it is used outside the US today, and it's got a huge market cap, way bigger than Circle. But this is kind of the second piece of news that Circle's had in the past 2 weeks that is probably not ideal for them. So they had the announcement that Hyperliquid is going to be looking for their own stablecoin, and it looks like they've chosen the person that's going to do that. And then they get the Tether announcement this past week. So while Circle looked really good for a while, I mean, 7.5% of their fund is used by Hyperliquid. So if it changes out a little bit there and they lose a lot of that, then maybe the growth slows down for Circle, and now Tether's kind of getting back into the mix, at least in the US too.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what we talked about with the Bo Hines move to Tether, and you know, Tether's going to move into the US market, and they know what they're doing. They've been in it a long time. They've got all the tracks laid. They really just need a coin that's interoperable with USDT and is compliant with US, you know, stablecoin requirements. So they get that, then, you know, you're basically able to pull funds from the US market buy your U.S. treasuries and Bitcoin and put those in the on the balance sheet and make money on that. And then, you know, those stable coins circulating around the United States. And then, yeah, I would assume there's no reason for you not to be able to convert those into USDT and then send them to wherever you need to send them. So this seems like the next step for Tether.
Yeah. So stepping back and looking at the entire crypto space, last week was a pretty good week for the crypto investment products. They had inflows of about $3.3 billion last week, which when you look to the prior week, it was about a $352 million outflow. So I think it was the sixth largest week this year. The U.S. was 2.3 of that 3.3 billion, and IBIT alone was about $1 billion of that 2.3. So once again, Bitcoin is doing well. The U.S. is still leading the market from a crypto investment products too.
Yeah, and nobody's talking about it. Even my algorithm that's pretty curated to give me a lot of Bitcoin and crypto information is not lighting up the charts with, you know, news and FOMO and anything else. So the price is back up into the 100 and teens. So we're not too far off from that 124,000 all-time high. Nobody cares.
Yeah, I saw a wild stat that Bitcoin's market cap in the past 18 months has contributed more to the market cap than they did in the previous 15 years. So the previous 15 years, it was about $435 billion in market cap. In the last 18 months, Bitcoin has added $625 billion in market cap. So just crazy numbers. And it's, I mean, that is kind of the definition of exponential right there. So it is kind of exciting to see. And like you said, nobody's really even paying attention anymore.
Yeah, I was kind of thumbing through getting ready for this podcast. And usually on the X account, I'll retweet or, you know, quote tweet and kind of add some information. And then I'm like, man, I really didn't put too much on there this week. I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of a weird thing. I mean, it's not like I'm in the woods without cell phone service all week. So it's just not being talked about much in the grand scheme of things.
Well, there's still a lot of things going on. Like the CBOE just announced that they're going to have plans to introduce continuous Bitcoin and Ethereum futures for U.S. customers. So typically these perpetual futures, they expire every month. But the CBOE has said they now will have contracts that last 10 years to give investors continuous long-term market access to two of the biggest digital coins by market cap. So that's pretty cool. There's a ton of money in perpetual futures that have been outside of the U.S. for a very long time. So, I mean, this is probably not big for most retail clients, but it is huge, I think, for the institutional side.
Yeah. And what they can do as far as entering positions and then hedging with a futures contract, that, you know, that's kind of what's required for, I mean, literally hedge funds, right? That's how they operate. So, yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a required piece for Bitcoin and crypto to enter the kind of the big money banking world. So we'll see if they use it in a big way, or if it, you know, if it's like a slow burn. I mean, the ETFs are still picking up steam. We're coming up on 2 years since they were live. So this is, you know, they don't move quickly, but you can see they move pretty steadily.
Yeah. So speaking of things that are picking up steam, there was a couple of IPOs last week too. Figure Technologies, which they kind of call themselves the largest non-bank provider of home equity financing. They IPO'd, they expected to IPO at about $20 to $25 a share. It jumped up to $20 to $22. They jumped up to $25 a share. So it values them at just over $5 billion, like almost $5.3 billion. So that was pretty good. And then, of course, Gemini, they had their IPO last week too. That's kind of been a big one that everybody's been paying attention to. They started a few weeks ago, months ago, whatever, at the $17 to $19 range. And then last week they said that's probably going to be closer to $24 to $26. Well, it ended up being priced $28 a share. It went up to about $45 and it's now down to $32, or at least as of yesterday. So yeah, I guess kudos to them. Another good IPO. It did not have the takeoff that Circle had, but it's still done very well considering they were starting in that $20 range, and it went up to $45. Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes, or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast.
Yeah, as far as the public version of the crypto companies, right, whether that's the Geminis and things like that, or the Nakamotos and MicroStrategies, it seems like there are so many options now that the funds flowing in are shared and distributed, so the pops aren't as high. So like Nakamoto's down like 90%. Mm-hmm. You've got a bunch of companies that are all kind of similar, and there's no, you know, they haven't, in a lot of cases, haven't even started buying Bitcoin yet. They just have plans and fundraising and things like that. So, you know, that to, again, it's not like we're in a bear market. You know, if your stock price is down 90% from the high, and Bitcoin's price is 115,000. I think the mechanics behind what we saw early on and what MicroStrategy did for years, you know, being kind of the only game in town, you know, I think we're going to see kind of a shift in how things work.
Yeah. So before we start talking about treasury companies, the one other thing that I did see too is NASDAQ invested $50 million into Gemini, and that deal included some of the links between Gemini's custody and staking services and then the collateral management features of NASDAQ's Calypso platform. So it's interesting to see that NASDAQ wants to be or get involved more with Gemini moving forward too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I put it on the list of like combinations of TradFi and crypto companies. I mean, it's NASDAQ seems to be pretty into this stuff. We talk about them at least, I'd say, once a month or so.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about treasury companies. Of course, the big one, Strategy. They bought another 525 Bitcoin for $60 million, probably one of their smallest buys in quite some time. They now hold just under 639,000 Bitcoin. The big thing is they bought all of this Bitcoin from the issuance of preferred shares, so not their common stock. And what's wild now is I think with that buy, the total holdings for Bitcoin treasury companies now exceeds 1 million Bitcoin, which is just right around 5% of the total supply. So if you look at it, I mean, out of that million, Strategy has 639,000, which is just crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at kind of their MNAV, and it's like maybe right around 1.5 or so. Like,
it's like 1.3 now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, but their ability to do things, right? I mean, I don't even know what the things might be, but when you have 600 and something thousand Bitcoin, and you've got a creative guy like Saylor who's looking for ways to monetize things in order to get more Bitcoin. And, you know, that it's not as though they're done. All right, we have these preferred shares. We buy Bitcoin. We're done. Like years from now, they're going to be doing something else. And so, yeah, that it's almost like the Bitcoin treasury companies are in a bear market and the Bitcoin price is just in a trading range, like an elevated trading range in a bull market. So it's kind of, I feel like this is a weird time in this kind of the new Bitcoin, you know, since the ETF launch and corporate adoption. So I don't know what's next, man, but like, it's kind of funky to watch.
Well, it's interesting because MicroStrategy has almost been a leveraged Bitcoin play by most people's terminology. But if you look at MicroStrategy, while they've outperformed Bitcoin, I think like 152% to 98% in the past year, they have underperformed Bitcoin about 90% of those trading days. So 220 of those trading days, Bitcoin's outperformed MicroStrategy. For 22 of those trading days, MicroStrategy has outperformed Bitcoin enough so that they are an extra 50%+ better than what Bitcoin's done in the past year, which is just kind of wild.
Yeah, you trying to time the MicroStrategy versus Bitcoin charts like as a total loser's game. You need to just pick if you want to get in, you just need to be in. And then honestly, if you can be in enough to get 100 shares so you can sell covered calls and make a little cash or generate some cash on it, I think that's probably the play. And if you are doing that, you need to have quite a bit of Bitcoin. Like you need to be happy with your Bitcoin stash before you start buying MicroStrategy.
Yeah. So speaking of other treasury companies, the other big one to talk about is Bitmain. Granted, they're Ethereum. They're still kind of the second largest treasury company behind Strategy. They just bought another 82,000 Ethereum last week. So they hold just over, I think, 2.15 million Ethereum worth about $10 billion. And if what's crazy, I was looking at just the Ethereum treasury companies. In the past 3 months, they've gone from about zero Ethereum in treasury companies to about 3.1 million, which is just a wild growth. So it's kind of crazy to look at right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, man. It has that feel of altcoin season when, like, man, I probably should have bought some Bitmain stock like when I first heard of it. The altcoin season, in my mind, because I used to pay more attention to more coins, it was always like, I heard about that 2 months ago and it's 5x. And there's like a feeling of like, man, I should have bought this or I should have bought that. And it's you like with these treasury companies, it kind of has that same feel of like, yeah, I heard we talked about when Tom Lee was going to get involved with Bitmain and da 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 da. We, you know, the likelihood of it going up was pretty good and I didn't do anything with it. Yeah, so it feels exactly the same way. If I would have bought it, it would have gone nowhere. So it's just the way it is.
Well, even Standard Charter came out and said they believe the Ethereum treasury companies are most likely to succeed long term due to their ability to generate staking yields. So we'll see if that really is true or not, because they're definitely getting a lot on they're getting some on Ethereum versus the whole Bitcoin thing.
Right. And it's easy to explain, like, even though the staking part, the mechanics behind the staking isn't easy to explain to investors, the generating yield is a lot easier to explain and to get investors to provide funding, because that makes sense, right? It's just like a dividend payment. So yeah, I could see how they could generate some investment. And then once you have the Ethereum, you know, it's kind of like now you have options, right? Holding assets gives you options.
Yeah, one of the other tokens that everybody's talked about is Solana. And there were Solana treasury companies before all the Ethereum treasury companies kind of started. The one that just took over the number one spot is Forward Industrial. Their ticker is Ford. They just bought 6.82 million Solana for just under 1.6 billion. They want to be the world's largest Solana treasury company. And as of right now, they are.
Yeah. I mean, somebody's going to be the world's largest Solana treasury company. Somebody's going to be the world's largest XRP treasury company. I mean, it's really just like altcoin stuff is just sliding over to the public markets. It's kind of like they kind of follow Bitcoin and they're following them into the stock market too.
Yeah, there's a medical company, Helios Medical Technologies. They just announced $500 million in funding to launch a Solana treasury company. Their stock jumped from about $7.56 on Friday to open on Monday at $25.85, so about a 250% jump. But what's crazy is there's a Solana infrastructure company called Helios Labs, and this is Helios Medical Technologies. They are not related at all. So I think everybody's been congratulating Helios Labs on the raise, and they're like, we have nothing to do with Helios Medical Technologies. So it's kind of weird that it's such a similar name.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is like, I've heard of Helios, but it's a different one.
Yeah. QMMM, which is a digital advertising firm, I think in Hong Kong, and their stock just jumped 2,300%. On Tuesday, when they announced that they would create a $100 million digital assets treasury, starting with Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana. What's crazy is, I think they, on their website, they listed they had about $500,000 in cash or cash equivalents, and their net loss in the past quarter or so was like $1.5 million. So no one has any idea how they're going to get $100 million, but it has definitely been something that in Hong Kong everybody's excited about, and we'll see where it goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's a company, Next Technologies, out of China that's got a $500 million Bitcoin. They got a reserve that they're going to buy Bitcoin with. So there's, you know, it's not just the United States stock market. And that's the kind of the beauty of the Bitcoin crypto ecosystem is it's not limited globally.
Yeah, and the one other token that we haven't heard a lot of in the digital asset treasury side of things is Avalanche. And Avalanche just came out and said they're wanting to raise $1 billion to fund two digital asset treasury companies. And the foundation will actually sell the Avalanche tokens to those two digital asset treasury companies at a discount to help them get started with a digital asset treasury company. So there's a good chance we're going to hear of two more here at some point, and they're going to be focused on Avalanche. So I guess I'm not sure how many more we can have, but Avalanche thinks at least two.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to keep going all the way down the risk curve. You know, we're going to have a top 50 crypto company that has a treasury company attached to it.
So changing gears a little bit, I did see the Texas Teachers Fund, which I think they have about $200 billion in assets. They just disclosed that they bought about $25 million in Bitcoin. Now, most of that's through MicroStrategy stock, but that's kind of where things start, right? It's going to be a little bit. It turns into probably a lot more.
Yeah, that's the way we see it, right? It's like you dip your toe in and then the foot and then everybody's swimming.
And then Coinbase was in the news. Their CEO tweeted that there's 3 months left in 2025. Lots of cool new products to ship. Let's do this. So did not provide a lot of details, although one of the things that it sounds like they're looking into is a token for Base, which is still in the exploration phase, but they had originally said they weren't going to have a token for Base, and now they're exploring it. So I'm sure there are quite a few people that are pretty intrigued by that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Coinbase has enough clout and enough weight to shift around. Like, but I feel like Base is going to, it almost has to work as long as Coinbase supports it. Like, these things, the longer they live, the more they're trusted. And as long as Coinbase doesn't let it die over time, it'll eventually latch on to something somewhere. And they also have the advantage of Coinbase's just revenue generation machine to keep pumping money and trying different things and pivoting and things like that, where, you know, a lot of these other tokens, you know, they just require cash inflowing in order to make it work. So once it becomes not popular, it kind of dies a slow death. So Coinbase has a huge advantage there.
Well, I mean, it's kind of an infrastructure play, and it's been so successful that in South Korea, Upbit, another exchange there, they just announced they have plans to launch their own L2 on Ethereum to do something similar for the infrastructure play. They're going to call it GIWA, G-I-W-A, and they're going to use Optimism's OP stack, which I think is the same thing that Base is using.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it'll find a groove, and then because it's got this backing, I think it's got a ton of support. It'll work eventually, yeah, and it'll probably be in a big way. That's just from what I've seen. I mean, like, look at Tether. Once it got big enough, there was so much negativity towards Tether. You know, is it backed by anything? A lot of speculation of it being kind of shifty and shady, and all of the stuff that died, and all the stable coins that lost their peg in 2021, 2022, Tether didn't. So, you know, I'm pretty bullish on Base.
One of the other really interesting things that I did see too, so Ant Digital is a company over in China. I think they're backed by Jack Ma. They have announced that they have reportedly connected over $8.4 billion worth of Chinese energy infrastructure to its blockchain platform, the Ant Digital platform. They said this is really going to be an early adoption that is more institutional rather than for retail investors. But this is a fintech firm that has just finished financing, I think, like three clean energy projects using tokenized assets, raising $42 million US dollars in total. And now they have begun tracking 15 million new energy devices, including wind turbines and solar panels, with plans to potentially list tokens on offshore decentralized exchanges to create more liquidity. And what's really cool about this is then that data could then be connected to the chain and provide information on how much energy is being generated, as well as status update on the health of the assets and the infrastructure itself. So it would be pretty cool if this happens and becomes kind of the norm that we can track everything that's happening around the world with all the smart energy stuff.
Well, energy is going to be a kind of a big piece to this puzzle, because with AI, data centers, and the consumption of energy from those, I think the speculation of how much energy we're going to need to run the AI data centers in the United States is about the total energy consumption of Germany. And to add that is unrealistic. It takes too long. So we need to be super efficient and get smart with it. So stuff like that could really have a place to play in as we kind of move the energy market forward, so we can keep up with what we need to do for these AI for the AI infrastructure to get built out.
Yeah, I think what I saw was the amount of energy that the U.S. needed in 5 years by like 2030 to run all the data centers was the same amount of energy that we have today. So in order for us to increase that, we have to do something pretty drastic. And if you look at the amount of energy that we've created over the past decade or two or multiple, it's been pretty flatlined. Like, we'll turn off coal and turn on solar or something like that. So there's not been a lot of energy creation. So I think nuclear becomes a big piece of this, at least hopefully. And the good news is, at least from an administration perspective, we've freed up the ability to start doing some more testing there. The problem is we're still close to 5 years out by the time all that gets put in production. So it's going to be a very interesting next 5 years from an energy perspective, because I do believe the more energy you have, the more GDP and ability you have to become successful is too. And more energy, and the cheaper the energy too, right? So the cheaper the energy, the better off you're going to be from a financial perspective.
Right. Yeah. Energy is what makes countries prosperous. And we gotta find new ways to do it, or find smarter ways to do what we're doing now. But there's a lot of motivation to do it. So I think we'll be all right.
So I read some news about Australia, and I feel like every time we talk about Australia, it's usually been negative lately from a crypto perspective, right? But OKK Exchange, they just announced the launch of a platform for self-managed superannuation funds, SMSFs, which I didn't know much about. They're kind of like these private retirement vehicles that allow individuals and small groups to manage their own savings directly, which is an alternative to the industry and retail funds that still dominate Australia's pension system. So this is mainly for pensions. And what's wild is the adoption has been far higher than most people realize. These SMSFs crypto holdings have grown about 7 times since 2021. So I think they're just over a billion, like 1.1, 1.2 billion US dollars are now invested. And if you look at the SMSFs, they manage about a third of Australia's $4 trillion retirement pool. So we're talking about 1 billion of $4 trillion. So there's a long way, I think, that this could go from a crypto perspective too for Australia, which is exciting.
Yeah, my college roommate has lived in Australia for 7 or 8 years now. And yeah, the superannuation fund is it's kind of like a mandatory FICA type of withdrawal from your checking account, from your paycheck, so that you're building up a retirement account. But it's not like Social Security in that it's just sits in a lockbox, or it's not even invested. It's kind of like a hybrid. It's like a required 401k almost. And so, yeah, from the investment side, it's passive flows. It's you know, everybody in Australia works is buying something with it. And so, yeah, if you can tap it into different assets, including cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, then the winners would be cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. You just have money flowing in, that's good.
Nepal was in the news here recently too. I think just over a week ago, the government banned 26 social media platforms there, which I don't think is a bad thing sometimes, but it is what it is. Protesters apparently downloaded BitChat, which we've talked about that before, Jack Dorsey's creation. It uses the Bluetooth mesh network and Noster to, so you don't actually have to be connected. And they were able to talk to each other and do demonstrations and all that. And it got some attention from BitChat because the downloads from Nepal alone pretty much doubled their typical weekly downloads worldwide. So it's kind of just showing that there is a lot of big wins that can still happen in the whole of freedom technology space. And this has definitely been one of those. And hopefully it continues to be used not only in Nepal, but in other places as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like for that BitChat, you know, find some places that'll use it and download it. And that system's going to improve based on the network. More people using it, it'll be better. So I think that's good. I think I still think it's funny. It's Jack Dorsey on Noster, like the guy that started Twitter using Nosters. I don't know. I feel like that's worth noting.
Belarus was in the news here recently too. Their president is urging the nation's bank to ramp up their use of digital assets. And really it's kind of trying to blunt the impact of some of the Western sanctions. I think they're external payments to exchanges have racked up about $1.7 billion in the first 7 months of this year, and they're estimating it's going to reach close to $3 billion by the end of the year. And then he's also been pushing tokenization for the financial sector, which he thinks can help minimize the presence of intermediaries, automate transactions through smart contracts, enhance user control over assets. So while I'm not a fan of the whole sanctions, or getting around sanctions, he's making a good point that we need to be doing this. And I think it makes sense for every country to look into this just to make things faster, easier, and cheaper.
Right. Yeah. I think the more countries that are looking at more things, the more things are going to work. And then some, you know, these systems are going to get picked and moved. And also these sort of things also help to just normalize the entire industry. And it, you know, it's moving from this kind of niche crypto nerdo category where not very many people are interested, into like countries are looking at this and using it and how to bring it more into like the stream of consciousness for everybody. So I think it's good.
I feel like we talk about Africa maybe once a month or so. There's a fintech company over there called ChipperCash. They're probably one of Africa's leading fintech companies. They just announced that half of all their Bitcoin transactions are using the Lightning Network. And this is a company that serves millions of customers and companies in Africa. What's amazing is because it's on Lightning Network, it works with Strike and Cash App and other Lightning powered platforms too. So starting to see some good things coming out of Africa. And I still think that's going to be one of those places that they don't have the infrastructure in place anyway. So if they can use things like this to bypass going through the typical banks that everybody else has, then they could just jump in front of the rest of the world and how they look at DeFi and all of this crypto in general.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like never having to run telephone lines. Like you just go straight to mobile and you don't ever have to incorporate this legacy banking system that's got tons of infrastructure, just bloat. So yeah, keep it clean and sleek. And then, you know, if nobody's ever accustomed to paying high fees to do financial transactions, they will never be able to pay high fees for financial transactions. So you can only keep going down the kind of this path that we're going down, which is pretty smart.
Germany was in the news here recently too. We talked about them just over a year ago. They sold about $3 billion in Bitcoin, about 50,000 Bitcoin, I think, back in July of 2024. By the way, it's now worth $5.6 billion. And that 50,000 Bitcoin they got from EBTK, there was apparently another 45,000 Bitcoin that they did not get, and that just got moved to another address. So, I mean, you're talking about close to another $5 billion of Bitcoin that's moving around now. So kind of wild that Germany keeps getting in the news for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it just takes that kind of a change in leadership. You know, no one is passionately opposed to Bitcoin, you know, like even Peter Schiff it's kind of a gag, you know? So they just need somebody to say it's okay. It's okay to hold Bitcoin. It's okay to have a strategic reserve. It's okay, you know, to let companies operate in Bitcoin and do it with like a regulatory environment where they can predict what's going to happen. So they just need somebody to stick their neck out and say it's okay.
Well, it's kind of like India, where I think this is the second year a finance minister has disclosed that they have some crypto gains. Although India really doesn't have a lot of stuff in place from a crypto perspective. So I think they still put a 30% tax rate on crypto, whereas all the equities have 12.5%. And 93% of Indians support crypto regulation, yet they don't really put anything in place. So it's kind of funny, do as I say, not as I do, apparently is a common theme for politicians.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's weird to me that India isn't a bigger player in the crypto markets, just because of who they are and what they are on the, as far as, you know, the tech world goes and things like that. I feel like they're a natural fit. They'd be way more progressive and active and innovative when it comes to crypto.
Yeah, such a technology hub, and it's amazing that they're somewhat falling behind. Speaking of falling behind, the UK was in the news again, of course. They are now proposing a stablecoin cap for holdings. So if you're an individual, between 10 and 20,000 pounds in the stablecoin. If you're a business, 10 million. One of the Coinbase executives kind of came out and said this would be bad for UK savers, it'd be bad for the city, and bad for the sterling. But this kind of goes back to almost how we started this, where banks don't like competition. So they are trying to put this in place so people don't move a majority of their money away from the bank and into something else that could possibly provide them an actual return.
Yeah, I mean, trying to limit how much people can invest or how people can spend their money is generally not good, and it's usually not successful. Mm-hmm. Like the UK, for all of its flaws, and it's erode, you know, they don't have freedom of speech, and they, you know, this is like a freedom of financial transactions issue. Like, but they're a modern society. They're connected through social media to every other country, including the United States. If you got enough money and you want to do stuff, you're just going to leave. Like, they're just going to drive their tax base away. And mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem like a good strategy to me.
Not at all. And then the last thing from a world perspective that I did see, U.S. Treasury just sanctioned about 19 entities related to pig butchering schemes. Apparently, those 19 entities cost Americans over $10 billion last year. They're mainly in Burma and Cambodia. So I'll be interested to see what that actually means and if they're able to do anything with those sanctions. But yeah, it's good to see that they're trying to fight back against all the crap that people are trying to do with stealing people's money.
Yeah, they got to do something.
PayPal was in the news. They just announced that they're going to integrate Bitcoin, Ethereum, and PYUSD, their PayPal, into a new peer-to-peer system, which is pretty exciting. This is going to extend into Venmo. It's initially for people in the U.S., but other countries, I think, will get it soon. This is something that kind of expands on the press release they had, I think, last week or a week before that, where they're going to create these one-time payment links that expire 10 days after issue that you can just send and kind of immediately take care of things. So it's pretty cool they're doing that. And then I guess the other thing that I saw kind of related to PayPal is Meso, who their co-founders actually come from PayPal and Venmo. They just sold their company to MoonPay. And if you're not familiar with MoonPay, they're kind of an infrastructure provider for the wider crypto and Web3 industry. And their ability is going to be to plug other companies into MoonPay's products, kind of similar to how Stripe does that in the traditional payments world. So MoonPay had actually acquired Solana Power crypto payment processor Helio for $175 million in January. Meso is kind of just something similar. There were no financial details given, but this is just helping MoonPay become bigger and better from a Web3 perspective.
Yeah, I mean, this goes into my sandboxes theory. Like, let as many kids play in as many sandboxes as possible, and maybe one of them builds something that's useful for everybody else.
Yeah, speaking to that point, we've talked about some of the AI agents and where that's going to grow in the past. Now, the Ethereum Foundation just created a DAI team to make Ethereum a settlement and coordination layer for AI agents. So they're also planning on building a decentralized AI stack so the future of AI doesn't rely on only a handful of entities. So I'm excited that they're doing this. I guess cautiously optimistic that that will happen and people use that. But I mean, it's better than having it all be in the OpenAI's hands that we have to rely on somebody like that company to do for anybody to use for an AI agent perspective.
Yeah, I mean, AI, like, it's got the feel of like the Bitcoin and crypto bull market. I mean, the number of things that are happening, the speed at which new versions of AI are coming out, like Grok 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. Like, I mean, it's rapid fire. There's, you know, it's a ton of activity. So it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, you could go a decade without having an industry like this.
Yeah. Polkadot is another name we haven't talked about in quite some time, but they just had a pretty big announcement. They're going to cap their supply at 2.1 billion. The DAO just approved it at like an 81% vote. So they're going to shift away from being unlimited to more of a deflationary monetary model. And I think in the next 10 years, if the rate they were going, it would have been 3.5 billion tokens. And now they're going to be under 2.1, I think it's like 1.9 is what they're expecting. So, I mean, that's exciting. I think there's a lot of optimism around the Polkadot ecosystem right now. They've done a lot of other things that other ecosystems are using. So maybe this brings some life back into the Polkadot side of things too.
Yeah. We haven't talked much about Polkadot. I mean, they were like, it felt like in that last bull market, they were right behind Solana on this curve of, you know, adoption and popularity and being talked about, but they kind of fizzled.
Yep. Grayscale had some announcements. Hedera Trust, which had the, of course, Hedera token, just got pushed by the SEC until November 12th. I think it's now one of about 90 other crypto ETFs that are waiting for SEC approval. So on top of that one, Rex Osprey had XRP ETF that is supposed to launch this week. And it should be the first XRP ETF with a bunch of others that will probably follow at some point. And then Rex Osprey, on top of that, they still have the Doge ETF, which will be DOJE, that's still waiting. And the crazy part about that one, it's probably going to be the first ETF with no utility on purpose. So a lot of stuff happening there or about to happen here in the next 2 months.
No, it's definitely not bear market material. Like, there's plenty of things that are happening.
And we talked about Chainlink earlier, but Polymarket just announced that they have tapped Chainlink to settle the markets related to asset prices. So everything else will still use their UMA method, which is the same thing that's caused a lot of problems in the past because users get to vote on it. But now if it's asset related, Chainlink will take care of it. And Chainlink has been probably the top Oracle company out there. So good news for Polymarket. And I think they're in the process of raising some more money now too at pretty high valuation.
Yeah. The betting markets thing is kind of a interesting industry to watch too. I mean, we've never really seen that. And then there, we talked about Chainlink twice in the same podcast for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm. What we haven't talked about for a while is FTX. But there's a couple of things coming out related to that. So Backpack, which is an exchange from a bunch of ex-FTX employees, is expecting to enter the U.S. market by the end of the year. They're already in a bunch of other countries. They went outside the U.S. because the U.S. was not friendly for a while. What's interesting about them is they have a daily proof of reserve posted on their website. After going through what happened with FTX, they think people want to see all this in somewhat real time. And it's interesting too, because the majority of their employees are from the US. So, I mean, no surprise there. A lot of the talent is here, but they've been driven to other places in the past. And hopefully that means they're coming back here. So not endorsing them at all. It's just kind of an interesting thing that I did see.
Yeah, no, it's like, there's, put it on the list of things that were worth watching.
And then SBF, we haven't said his name in a while, but he is appealing his 25-year court thing that I think it's actually going to be heard in November. His lawyers are arguing that trial errors and a biased judge warrant overturning his 25-year sentence. And I read that and I was like, I wonder what the trial errors were. And if you're going to find another judge that thinks what he did was okay.
Well, the 25-year sentence, if I remember, was like around half of what he could have gotten. So, you know, if that judge is biased and he still, it's not like he gave him maximum sentence or even something like in addition to a maximum sentence. So I feel like 25 years is a lot, but he's not going to get 5 years. You know, maybe you have a different judge that gives him 20. So I feel like, you know, attorneys are going to appeal, and that's what they're doing here. This doesn't have a feel of like, oh, this guy's going to win this appeal.
I'm not sure if he can ever be forgiven is the problem. So I'm not sure why you ever let him out.
Right.
Let's talk about NFTs real quick, and then I'll be done. OpenSea, we talked about it last week, that I think they're going to be unveiling their new token, the C token. Because they did that, they also doubled their fees practically overnight. So they went from 0.5% to 1%, which is interesting because they had already lost market share in general. Their competitors, Plur is one of the big ones, has 0% fees. And then the other big guys are holding steady at 0.5%. So I'm not sure why you would want to go to OpenSea and pay a lot more in fees for getting a subpar experience. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I guess OpenSea is promising these rewards. So the money they collect, they're going to give back some of it to the users.
Now, 1% fee seems high, you know, for what they're doing. Everything's digital. 1% commission on a deal is, I mean, real estate is like 3. Yeah. So like 1% is kind of dumb for me.
And then American Express is actually kind of getting into the NFT space, and it's not officially being called an NFT, but they have introduced Ethereum-based travel stamps that will be put on the Base network. These travel experience tokens, they're ERC-721 tokens, right? So they are technically NFTs. They're going to be minted and stored on Coinbase's Base network, and they are collected anytime a traveler uses their credit card. So they're not tradable NFT tokens, and they don't have any function like blockchain-based loyalty points, at least for the time being. So I'll be intrigued to see if that changes in the future, but it is kind of intriguing that Amex is kind of playing with the NFT space a little bit and dipping their toe in the water.
Yeah, man, like American Express, Visa, MasterCard, you know, I mean, we haven't really said much about Wells Fargo and Bank of America yet, but guess what? In the next 6 months, I bet we say Wells Fargo and Bank of America. So, you know, everybody's got to figure out how they can integrate this new market into their existing company in order to not get disrupted by somebody else. So this, yeah, it's happening. And I feel like every week there's more to talk about.
Yeah. What else did I miss?
Man, I don't have anything in my notes that we didn't check off. So I think we're in good shape this week.
Yeah, so even though the price isn't looking great, there's still a ton of very positive momentum. And it'll be exciting to see how this continues to play out. I think everybody was expecting this maybe top in October, and from a Bitcoin perspective. And hopefully that's not the case. I think we're a long ways away, especially if you use like the Pi Top indicator. We're nowhere near to a top at this point. So we should continue to see good things happen for months, if not years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it appears, it kind of feels to me. I mean, without a super exciting, you know, hyperbolic price rise where everybody's talking about it and then it crashes, which we don't have that. We have the most boring, steady climb. You know, we go into this higher trading range and then we beat around it for 6 months, and then we move up to the next and we beat around it for 6 months. We're kind of building these strong foundations of cost basis for investors. And I mean, that just makes these increase, you know, bull runs last longer because there's no trap doors, you know, in the price structure and the technical analysis, or, you know, really, you know, where people buy. And so for me, yeah, I think we're not 1 month away from the end of this bull cycle. It doesn't feel that way at all.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Cause I'm hoping price goes way higher than this.
Agreed. Yep.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, looking forward to catching up next week, and we'll see what's changed in the next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
Yep.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.